Thanks a lot, John. Lots of food for thought there for our discussion later. Before I throw it all open to the rest of you, I'm very happy to be joined by Judith Knott and Jonathan Riley, who are going to offer their thoughts on the future of tax simplification. Judith is now an independent commentator on tax. I know that one of the things she does is write an interesting blog for us all to read. I also know that lots of you will actually recognise her from one of her previous tax roles, HMRC and HMT, the most recent of which was as Director of Large Business at HMRC. So Judith will kick us off. We'll then hand to Jonathan, who is Head of Tax at Grant Thornton. He's also been there as a partner for over 20 years and is primarily responsible for their tax strategy. He's also confessed a particular interest in tax simplification, so he's in very good company tonight. Anyway, Judith, you first.
Right, good evening, everybody. So I'd like to start tonight by paying tribute to the OTS, to John and his team, to Paul, who's taken over as tax director. I think they've made an excellent start on what is an immense challenge. And to get a sense of the scale of that challenge, I want to focus on the forces that are working against simplification. In my experience, the reality is that in practice, as opposed to theory, simplification really isn't a priority, either for the government or for the taxpayer. I think I can just bring myself to say taxpayer now that I've been away from HMRC for a year and customer used to be the order of the day, but I think I can say taxpayer now. So for governments of any political flavour, the priorities are generally some combination of obviously raising revenue, introducing tax breaks to incentivise whatever behaviour fits with their wider agenda, and trying to make the tax system fairer, however they choose to define fairness. And let's face it, of course, they usually don't define what they mean by it. Now, as John concluded, fairness isn't necessarily incompatible with simplicity, but in practice, the two often do pull against each other. And fairness can be used to justify a very wide range of tax changes, many of which don't simplify the system. Now, of course, in theory, simplification has been a government objective for some time, and great credit should go to the incoming government in 2010 for creating the OTS to demonstrate its commitment to simplifying the system. But the problem is that in practice, one of the other priorities will generally trump simplicity in any given situation. One government priority that might in principle lead to simplification is competitiveness, and John mentioned that earlier. And indeed, the OTS may well owe its existence to the business-friendly agenda of the 2010 government. You remember George Osborne, "I want to a sign to go up over the British economy saying Britain is open for business." Seems quite a long time ago now. But looking more closely at what business-friendly means simply takes us to the question of what are actually the priorities for the taxpayer. Again, in theory, most taxpayers, including businesses, would say in the abstract that the system is far too complicated and they want a simpler system. But in practice, when it comes to any given change, it's the quantum of tax that they'll have to pay that generally trumps simplicity, and particularly true when a tax increase is proposed. In the case of business, it might be that certainty is an overriding criterion. But this definitely isn't the same thing as simplicity, and in fact, it might be diametrically opposed to simplicity. The consequences of this prioritisation by taxpayers are first, and as John has mentioned, it's a brave politician who suggests simplification without compensating the losers. And generally, you do have winners and losers in terms of the quantum. And then of course, you get into the revenue-raising priority. Secondly, and possibly slightly more controversially, the vast amount of consultation that's taken place on tax in the last 10 to 15 years, essential though it is to get legislation right, I think has perversely added to the complexity of the tax code. certainly grown enormously in that time. So if we're serious about tax simplification, if we support the OTS's mission, how do we overcome the fact that in practice, in any given instance, it's unlikely to be a priority either for the government or for the taxpayer? I think the most important point is we shouldn't give up on simplification. I just want to mention a couple of examples from my own experience on corporate tax, and they show how it may be possible to introduce real simplification as part of broader packages of reform. One example is the abolition of the industrial buildings allowance in 2007, which was part of a package including a reduction of the corporation tax rate down to 28%, which we thought was low in those days. Now, an interesting feature of this is that it did provoke an outcry. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's at least one person in the audience who will still argue that it was absolutely outrageous to make that change. But the government stood firm, partly because there was quite a strong rationale for the change. Also, I assume, because it was part of the package and the revenue saved contributed to funding the overall tax change. So as part of that package, that simplification was made. The second example I wanted to mention was the elimination of the complexity of the marginal small companies rates of corporation tax, which was a byproduct of the reduction of the main rate of corporation tax to 20%. It was a byproduct, you know, that was, change was not made in order to simplify the system, but it did simplify. And so it just illustrates that you can actually get simplifications if you look out for what can be achieved as a byproduct of wider reform. So what does this mean for the work of the OTS? I think primarily it means that they need to have patience. As John has said, keep at it. The OTS have laid some excellent foundations. Some of their ideas may not get immediate traction, but they're there, ready to be used as part of wider packages when the time arises. But I'd also suggest that there's a case for the OTS playing a stronger role in consultation, in the consultation process. As John has said, if we are going to simplify the tax system, it's essential to tackle the flow as well as the existing stock of complexity. So new legislation needs to be as simple as possible. But at present, in any given consultation, in my experience, nobody really holds the brief for simplicity. This isn't that officials want to make the system more complicated, but nobody is there pushing against the plethora of changes, wrinkles that are suggested in consultations. Quite often, consultees may suggest specific wrinkles. If they don't cost too much, the government may well accept them. And that might be the right thing to do in all of those individual instances. But the combined effect of that is to make the system more complicated. And I think there needs to be a counterweight to that, a stronger voice for simplification inserted into the process. And that seems to me an obvious role for possibly an expanded OTS. And it could perhaps give the government greater resolve to ensure that a theoretical commitment to simplification is actually translated into practice. Jonathan, I think, is going to cover more of the political context, but just as a final point, I did want to end with a few words on what the current UK political situation might mean for simplification. It seems to me likely that the government is unlikely to be able to do very much on taxation over the coming years, given the distractions of Brexit, minority government constraints. So you could see that as bad for simplification. It's going to be even less of a priority than usual, unlikely to be packages of reform that could include simplification. On the other hand, it also means the government won't have much scope for tinkering with the tax system. So on balance, on this particular issue, it mightn't be a bad thing, and John's peer may not be extended too far towards France during the next few years.
Thank you, Judith. And I'd also might be associated with your comments regarding the praise that should rightly be directed towards the OTS. Obviously, you've been listening to people now speak for getting on for 45 minutes, and I think one of the benefits of having a debate like this is to have a debate and get your opinions too. I'll just say one last thing, though, that given what you suggested as your title for the speech, The Confessions of a Tax Simpler, I was going to describe myself as Judith's correspondent, but that probably wouldn't be a terribly clever thing to do. Look, I'll keep this relatively brief. I'd like to talk about three key things, picking up the elements of John's address. I think, first of all, I'll start with history. You know, we learn a lot from history, whether it's Edward VI or anything else. The fact of the matter is, the way we've got to where we've got to, the complexity that we have in our system now, is born out of things that are going to happen again, but they're going to happen more quickly. So changes to the way in which we do business, the moving away from a bricks and mortar environment into a digital online environment, the way in which people work, not a job for life anymore, the fact that people have various different employments or self-employments, engagements, freelancing, all of those things are a pace that's going to change even more. The way in which the public have got engaged with tax, I mean, through the sort of Starbucks, Amazon situations, the engagement that the public wants to have with the way that people pay their tax, the way they account for tax, the way they explain their tax, that isn't going to slow down anytime soon. So, I think as well, the way in which the profession has reacted to those changes too, that also is going to change. I mean, one thing that's very dear to my heart is the way in which we develop the tax professional of the future. And that's not just about understanding the statutes, the interpretation, the guidance. It's also about their approach to tax in a broader, more ethical, society-focused way. All of those things will happen. So the way we've got to where we are today is going to happen again. So we've got to learn from those lessons and make sure that the regulation and legislation that we have reflect the lessons that we can learn from history. And that takes me on to the second point, the stock issue. Despite the efforts of the OTS, we've still got, I think it's the second longest tax code. I think India just beats us. I was with one of my Indian colleagues last week, and he said, we've beaten you, not just at cricket sometimes, but also in terms of length of complexity. But we have a very long tax code, and that's obviously made worse by the amount of guidance and interpretation that backs that up. So the stock that is on the books has to be addressed. We can't just leave it as it is. And that's kind of really difficult because I look to Paul Morton taking over at the OTS and he's got the devil's own job in many respects. We are where we are, but I think it's really incumbent on the government of whatever colour we're going to have, and I think we know which colour we're going to have at the moment, a sort of bluey-orange colour would appear to be the right. But we've got to make sure that the government, and when we eventually get a new financial secretary, that they accept the need to simplify, they accept the role of the OTS. And that's going to be very difficult whilst the political environment is in such a state of flux. And I did say flux, although I could have perhaps gone slightly further. And I think building on that acceptance, it's really important that there is action to back up the words, because again, I think that we hear the fact that simplification is important and it should be central to the way in which we address the complexities in our tax regime. But I still like to think that the political will would go further and that there would be more effort to implementation of recommendations rather than sometimes what feels a bit like lip service. And just as a daft aside, there's a third point here. I don't know, show of hands, who here has been to visit the Office of Tax Simplification? Got a few people, that's good to know. Well, the first time I went there, I was actually shocked that the OTS is in the basement of 100 Parliament Street. So I had this vision of going into the dungeon. Underground, it feels like a dungeon. So I had this vision of going... had this vision of going in and seeing John dressed as a medieval jailer with a big rack... with some poor tax official on the rack being stretched to confess to his sins of complexity. I do think there's something just about the feel of having those that you believe are important and critical to the process of simplification actually alongside ministers, stick them on the second floor with the spads and the ministers. I do think there's something about the mood around how important you view these things and how you then play that out. And the third aspect I'd just pick up on really is around flow, and I think this is, for me, the critical part. You know, we can carry on with the status quo, we can carry on with sort of talking about what the OTS does, we can think about the lessons we learned from history too. We had an excellent report from the Institute for Government, Better Budgets, about how we actually deal with implementation of legislation, policy decisions going forward. That's really great too. But we still have so many other people involved with tax simplification. And I'm as guilty as any. I'm on the Forum of Tax Professionals, this body established when David Gawke was Exchequer Secretary, actually, which reports back in respect of the process of implementing policy decisions. We have, obviously, the institutes clearly having a big voice on simplification. The various member firms, particularly the larger member firms, we have third sector entities, things like the APPG on responsible tax, the work that's supported by COVI. Surely there's got to be a case of perhaps collaborating more. I think there's something about bringing all that clout together, and instead of sometimes duplicating what we do, actually getting better bang for our buck. I think just as society seems to be saying, if we look at the election and interpret it in certain ways, that there needs to be greater consensus about how we move forward generally in the political and economic environments, we also need to have consensus about how we approach simplification too. And my final point in respect to flows, I do think that there's an inherent contradiction here, and here I run the risk of getting the wrath of my fellow professional tax advisors. Sometimes the profession talks with forked tongue. You know, we do talk for simplification, but actually we've got to accept that complexity by its very nature is what we get our earnings from. That's what we live by, the interpretation, how we guide people through a very complex regime. And I think on occasion sometimes the profession has also got to be bolder and back up its words, saying simplification is important by its actions too. So I'll pause there and open it up for debate. I think final comment is, again, to pay regard to John. John has set the ball rolling in terms of simplification. The last 7 years, I think great strides have been made. I think it's now incumbent on all of us just to determine how fast and how far that particular ball rolls. Thank you.